Tech, WNST, Towson, Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. We are positively in Essex, Middle River. The Sioux Creek is where we are, deep in the heart of East Baltimore, in my homeland. I used to go to Rocky Point right here in Porter's as a young man. It's all brought to you by the Maryland Lottery. I've got instant scratch-offs. We had a $20 winner. Yell over there. You won $20. People are screaming.
$20 winner.
Yeah, $20 winner here at McFalls. We're at the Oyster and Reel in Essex, if you're familiar with the Iron Horse Tavern, right near my radio station, Lock Raven, Cromwell Bridge. This is the sister location. Glenn's going to be joining us, telling us the Ernie Tyler story, the Jimmy Tyler story. There's Orioles stuff everywhere. The Orioles are on right now. When they came in, you were up to 8-1. Now
8-5.
You and I start talking, and Grayson Rodriguez isn't pitching well. Pete Carinci is here, the emeritus head coach of all things UMBC soccer, and the head dog right here. Well, the head dog was really Hrabowski, right?
Like, yeah.
When Freeman
Dr.
leaves,
Hrabowski.
He's the big dog. You were the little dog.
Yeah, Dr. Hrabowski.
Who's the big dog now?
I don't know. Everybody's new over there now.
Well, I mean, we talked a little bit. I'm not going to make you cry in this segment or whatever, but you made me remember stories because, like, you told me this crazy story about three of the most famous soccer players in the world, like a TV commercial, coming over and kicking a ball around with a bunch of Polish and Italian kids in a alley. Where did you do that?
John Booth Recreation Center. It's called a school lot, and that's all the best.
Where
player.
Is it?
It's right on Claremont Street in the heart of Hollandtown. And
how far from Pompeii?
It's right down the street.
Okay.
And on that street, Claremont Street, there was probably six or seven guys played in NASL or played at a high level, all Americans. Santino, they're all born on that. Santino Caranta, Paul Skurdy, they're all lived on that block. Ernie Cox.
And you saw those kids play when they were 8, 10, 12 years old, right?
Oh, yeah,
like Santino.
Santino was phenomenal at a young age. His son's really good, Valentino. He's really good. I mean, he's going to be the next guy to look out for.
Did you see the Freddie Adu thing that came up over the weekend where he talked about the pressure
on him? I haven't watched it yet either. Me neither.
No, I just figured I'd get some.
Yeah.
Because to be a sensation, it's really difficult, right? I mean, like, whether it's Kenny Cooper Jr., we've known, obviously, this kid out of Harrisburg and Hershey, right? Like, you know, other level. I saw his father play as a Harrisburg Heat player. Didn't really know how to pronounce his Pulisic. We didn't know how to even say it when I was doing the games with Gary Stein and with Ted Patterson back in the day with the Blast. But again, to see an Adley Rutschman, to see Lamar. I mean, you drove in here today. Lamar got $260 million, right? Like, we're just at a different level for where sport is in our culture. And we talked a little bit about the arrogance of all of it and them throwing me out and the Orioles throwing me out 70 and me being taken to heart by people like you because I love sports. It's all I ever wanted to do was be involved in doing this 31 years into it, but it has changed dramatically.
Oh, yeah.
And your sport specifically has taken such great, great strides in this country. We're getting a World Cup back again. We're not getting into Baltimore, and that's for the third segment.
That's a whole other topic.
That's off air, but maybe a little bit on the air. But your sport, Ted Lasso, the World Cup, all of that, 32 years later, three kids from England couldn't show up in Highlandtown and kick a ball with some kids at Claremont.
Every person would have known who they were because Baltimore especially is one of the hotbeds of watching the EPL games and watching pro soccer.
Oh, Saturday morning.
We're one of the top five cities in the country. So literally, I think every kid now growing up has their own team, follows it. When I remember when we were, you know, we used to, kids from us, about four or five of us, used to have to get in our car and drive over to D.C. and go into a theater and watch a World Cup game because it was on closed circuit TV. Back in the early
70s. Did you really do that?
Yeah. We did it.
72, 76?
Really? George Barry, Paul Skurdy. We all drove over, and we watched the game. And I remember Italy was playing because we were all big Italian fans. But literally, you had to go over there to watch the games. And so it was almost like I don't want to use the word cult, but it was almost like an underground. You knew where the games were. You drove over. You watch it in a big theater with all these a lot of foreign people over in D.C. And we watched the World Cup games. And then the next thing you know, It's getting bigger and bigger. But it was always big in Hollandtown. At Dundalk, it was big. But it was always in that, especially in that school lot. The players that were produced out of there, Larry Sirach was one of the best players to ever come out, athletes to ever come out of Baltimore. Gino Pinacchia, one of the best athletes to ever come out of Baltimore. He's a Hall of Fame for soccer. He's in the Hall of Fame for softball. I mean, just phenomenal athletes that just grew up in that, right there on that street alone. I mean, that, right now, that's probably a story, 30-30 story, on how many guys from that street played on the U.S. national team that it's unknown in Baltimore, that people don't even realize that grew up on that street.
Tell me about that park versus Patterson Park, which I want to say about 8 blocks away, 10 blocks away, most. I mean, just across Highland Avenue, right?
It was basically, I mean, eventually when we all got older, we all played together at University of Baltimore. Most of them played together at Patterson. My group, we went to Calvert Hall, and then we start winning championships. But clearly, it was almost like a dividing line, East Avenue. And
that, well, then Curly got involved after that, right? Sure.
Curly was actually involved in the early 70s, too, when he had Jimmy Loftus and all those guys, and them in Patterson. But Calvert Hall got started in 72, or 70. 70 was our first championship. Actually, Mr. Karpovich.
Karp
came down to East Baltimore, that lot, and he recruited me and Gary Gnatowski. And the next thing you know, he had
now, think about it. Hold on now. Yeah. I want you to tell that story. So 1970...
No, it was 68.
All right, so Karp comes down recruiting players
in Holland
on a playground.
In a playground.
Like a legendary Highlandtown playground.
It's the playground. It's the school lot.
But you're 13 years old,
no
right?
Parents there. Yeah, he comes in. He comes down. Well, my cousin, George Barry, he was there, so he told him where to come down.
Oh, here's where the kids play.
So here's where the guys play. He introduces us. He watches us play. We get the first two scholarships ever from Calvert Hall.
You went to Calvert Hall for free?
No, not a full scholarship.
No, just part. Okay.
But it only cost like $600 to go there, so I got a half a scholarship, $300 back then.
And your family could afford that. That was meager, but
my father had a good day at the track.
Okay, fair enough.
So then he could pay for it. Other than that, so clearly after that, we come down the next year and we get Louis Spath, who was a high school All-American, Johnny Palmier, who was one of the best backs ever, and Richie DeSantis. And that was us.
Makes five. Nice pizza, that guy.
Us five guy. Became the core.
Did
of that.
Did you do a crab cake up there at DeSantis?
Yes, very good. Why don't you come up there? I mean, it's packed every night.
Done.
You know,
done.
All right.
Tell Richie. Text him right now. Tell him I'm doing a crab cake tour up there this
I'll
summer.
Text
I love
him.
Richie. Will he put me a crab cake on one of those Matthew's pizzas?
Yeah, whatever you want. Yeah. Don't put it on. You got to come up there.
I'll
gotta,
be hungry that day.
You got to come up and do it.
I love Richie DeSantis' place. He knows this.
Well, Richie was there, and the next thing you know, that's the nucleus of that team. But getting back to that lot, that school lot was all players just went down, and it's totally different than it is today. It was unorganized. We went down there, we played every sport. We you know, competed every night. And for me, and I said this on the film that they did the other day, when they asked me how I became so competitive, well, it was going up there. And every day you went down that lot, you played.
And you were the young kid.
And I was the young kid at the beginning. And you played against the guys that are playing for the Bays, the pro team, or you're playing against professionals. And, you know, now when I went to high school or college, literally, I remember going to college and I had all played against all these guys. My freshman year, I had 20 goals in freshman year. But I just thought, like, there's nobody better than I'm playing. These guys, none of them are better than what I was playing with every day down the school lot. So that was the mentality that you had and set. And then I was coaching all the young kids, Tommy Caranta and all those Craig Countings. They all became the next All-Metro team. And we went to the finals, and we won the East Coast Regional, we were the only time we flew to Canada with a team from East Baltimore. It was me, two parents, not like today. We had to cover it. We paid for it. And we flew from Baltimore to Canada, and we lost to St. Louis in the U.S. final. We got robbed. And then the two teams from U.S. and Canada played one another. But it's stories that people don't even know happened, but it's amazing.
They just think you're the coach.
But it's amazing how back then, just that little area, and every kid that was on that team, nowadays that team's worth, because you're getting fees for coaching. I already got paid for coaching. I had to pay for the kids after the game, go take them to the – they're all young.
Snowball stand.
Snowball stand. you know, my father took him.
Take him up to G&A.
My father took
him
over to Bud's to get crabs, and some of them were taking carryouts. I can't. I got to bring my father six crabs home. And my father said, "All right, here, go ahead.
Come on, Bud. Here's ten bucks.
There you go, Bud. Yeah."
So. Pete Carangi to Pride of Highland Town, retired, has so much time on his hands that he can drive over here to Essex or Middle River, where we are. We're at McFalls. We're at the Oyster and Reel. You just go past Chesapeake High School. Go past Pizza John's. Just keep coming. I know Looney's has got Riverwatch up the street. It's all brought to you by our friends at the Maryland Lottery. I got a $20 winner at the door, and I'm going to wear my Window Nation at 866-90-NATION. You buy two, you get two free. I did that last year. They didn't give me 5 years of 0% financing when I did mine. I did mine last August. I just went straight in, but you can get that right now. 5 years, 0% financing. Call our friends at Window Nation, 866-90-NATION. They put us on the road. We'll have the crab cake here at McFalls. Glenn's going to be coming on. I think Terry Cook, who was once a contestant in my King of Baltimore sports competition. He's a bartender here. I'm looking forward to having Terry on, talking some wagering and Lamar and baseball. State of sports, you said something to me off the air about it's shame what the Ravens did to you. And like a day like today, I would have been out at the Lamar press conference. The amazing thing is if Luke had gotten sick today, they wouldn't let me in. Now, I don't – it's just an amazing transformation for these franchises that are worth billions of dollars now. But the Orioles, for the first time since you and I have had gray hair, are doing something that's making you look over your shoulder. It's 8-6. Hang on, boys. It's only the fifth inning. We're in trouble.
Double play.
Yeah, so he's watching the game,
there
right?
You go.
So you love the Orioles. You love Baltimore. I'm like, did you play baseball? Because in my neighborhood, in my neighborhood, nobody played soccer. I mean, I'm being honest with you. I grew up Colgate. Everyone was baseball, football, basketball. We didn't really have an organized football program in our neighborhood by the time I got old enough. But baseball was everything, and I felt bad for the one kid that had a lacrosse stick.
Yeah, that was
because like that kid would throw the ball up against the wall. I remember this kid from Berkshire, and I don't know where he went to school. I don't even know the kid. I don't remember his name. He was like Rudolph. He didn't play any of the reindeer games.
That's
you know what I mean? Like
that.
Baseball, you wanted to get a game up in my neighborhood.
We played.
You played baseball. Yep. I mean, soccer, like, this never happened in my neighborhood. And I guess that is neighborhood. Baltimore's provincial like that. In some neighborhoods, they picked up a lacrosse stick and never saw a baseball bat.
Or
right?
soccer.
Or soccer.
Ball, yeah.
Right.
Yeah, we had our neighbor in that school. We played organized baseball. All right, I played organized baseball one in the Hollandtown Exchange League and then back up into our Pompeii team, you know, where that school lot was. And the rec centers all played against each other all over the city back then. So,
Did you ever play Joseph Lee Fields?
Yeah, we played Joseph. I played every place in Baltimore.
I played for Eastwood, literally.
Yeah.
So they would have the All-Star Tournament in August, right? So Little Flower would come over. I mean, like, and it was beautiful because all the kids had different jerseys.
Yeah.
I mean, it looked like something right out of Bad News Bears. You know what I mean? Like, kids from Gardenville would come over and they're wearing something, and the kids from Little Flower, and everybody had something different going on. That's a beautiful parade to see the kids play Little League.
The best story was we played every sport except lacrosse. One kid we found with a lacrosse stick, and I literally none of us knew what the heck
knew
he
the
was
rules,
doing.
Right?
Yeah.
He's
throwing it against the wall, but we played every sport organized. Soccer was our sport. And then we were probably like 15 years old, and our rec leader, Leroy Egan, he belonged to the National Guard. Well, the National Guard at that time was starting, there was really the big thing was to try to make European team handball like an American sport, the new sport. So Parkville Armory sponsors a team. They send a bus down to Hollandtown, to our school lot, to our rec center, and they took 10 of us. And they make us Parkville, and we go out there and we're practicing European team handball. We become the state champs 2 years in a row.
You played European team. I can't even say European team handball.
You're gonna love this story. So we play two. We win championship in the Maryland State up the Armory downtown.
Fifth Regiment.
We go up there and we win the state championship. All soccer players representing Parkville, but we're all from Hollandtown. We're like the
Ringers.
The dead end kids.
Ringers.
Right? So.
We had a word for that.
Then the next year, they're going to have a nationals. They're going to bring all these things. So we win the state. We win the regionals. We go to the national tournament. We go to Milwaukee. Time magazine's there. Life magazine, not Time, Life magazine, and they're doing a story. So I got as a picture in Life magazine of me and four of my friends.
It says
from
Parkville.
No, we Hollandtown, Love It or Leave It. That was our T-shirt. So that's just a great story. So we play, and we're all playing, and we were one game removed. We lost in a national championship against a basketball team. They were all bigger and stronger than us. We lost by one goal. We basically got robbed again, but that's a whole other story. So we win.
Always pissed at the officials.
We represent,
such a coach.
We represent Baltimore. Now, greatest story. This is a movie, and 99% of it, I never told this story. We drive down, who don't have the socks ready. I mean, we're the dead-end kids, right? We're 15 years old. We're in a bus. No parents. And we got. Now they tell us we got to go to Fort Meade.
Who's coaching this outfit?
Leroy Egan.
All right, so he's running you to Milwaukee.
Leroy Egan's our rec director.
You get on a bus to Milwaukee?
No, we flew.
Flew, okay.
John Booth Rec Center. That's where we were on. Leroy was the rec director, and he also was in. So Leroy takes all of us to Milwaukee. We come back. Now we had to go to – so the next year – I'll fast forward. The next year we're playing in the regionals, and after the regional final, we got to drive from up in Pennsylvania down to Fort Meade. They want us to play against the national team, under 17 from Germany. Germany, that's their national sport. And these guys are all big and strong, and they come in, and so now the place is packed.
You're in Fort Meade.
Fort Meade, packed, right? And we're like –
This is 1967, 68?
This is, probably 68.
I didn't even know they had airplanes
69,
back then.
69, right around 69, close to 70. I'm around 15. So we're there, and we arrive in Fort Meade, and everybody wants to go home. We're tired. But they're the Globetrotters, and we're the Washington Generals.
You're Washington Generals, right? Okay.
We're Americans, don't know the sport. And the place is packed because this is their national team. And they're coming out and they're doing
German national anthems going on? Okay.
Tricky. They're doing tricks. They're doing a little clinic first. And we're just sitting there like, come on, we want to go home. Everybody's young. Now we got to go out and play them. Nestor, as sure as I'm sitting here, it was like the movie. We wind up beating them.
You beat
team
them?
From Baltimore beat the national German national team. Okay, it's on radio. It's on most people. 99% of people never heard that story, but a group from Baltimore, us guys, we beat them. We beat them at that place. It stunned the crowd, and we were stunned because they were like we didn't care. Like we were tough. It had a bunch of tough kids that just went out and just played, and it was amazing. So we beat them, and to this day we still talk about that like. So that's a story.
One of the greatest things you've ever done.
One of the greatest things we've ever done.
But nobody knows. And nobody cares. But
now it's
out. Public. It's public.
Public. But you just got another first.
I have so many stupid stories that I've only told once or twice on the air.
That's a story I've never told, but that's true.
Which guy? Martin? Which guy on the 66 UK team, World Cup team, you kick in the nuts?
It was Bobby Moore.
Bobby Moore.
I didn't kick him. No, I didn't kick him. Somebody else kicked him. But Bobby Moore is a legend there. Bobby Moore...
Was it on purpose or was it just
in the game? Yeah, it wasn't.
It wasn't.
But once they got kicked, they went. Nah, that's it. That's it. We'll go back to the bar.
So Pete tells a story in the last segment, first segment we did here at McFalls about this pickup
Bobby
game,
Moore.
Which allowed us into this conversation. I interviewed Engelbert Humperdinck, 30 years ago at the paper, and he's Engelbert Humperdinck, right? He's played Pier 6. And I got on the phone with him, and he's a lovely man. You're a lovely British man, you know. Just charming, charming, you know. And he said to me, lad, do you play tennis? And I'm like, yeah, I play a lot of tennis, actually. And he said, me and my girl, we love to play tennis. Could you find a partner and maybe play some doubles on the day of the show?
Did it?
Like, he invited me. And I'm Engelbert Humperdinck. So I grabbed Tom Kapp, who was... Maryland State racquetball champion. He's not a great tennis player, a very good tennis player, but a champion racquetball player. One of our partners here at WNST, Tom. Life of friend. He was my college professor at Dundalk Community College in 1985, okay? My health professor. So anybody knows me knows Tom. So Tom and I go over to Green Spring Racquet Club, Pairing Racquet Club. It's Pairing or Green Spring? It was Pairing. We went over to the racquet club, and Tom had it all set up. Engelbert Humperdinck's there. He brings his girlfriend. Come out. Engelbert's all, you know, fixed up. He's got his Prince racket. I got my racket. Yeah, I look like Elin Estasi. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Capper looks a little bit like Bjorn Borg. You know what I mean? His girlfriend looked a little bit like Martina Navratilova. I don't know. You know what I mean? So we're out there and we're playing doubles and we got a game going on and, you know, we're all relatively, it's a doubles game. So it's not too, you know, there's not a lot of running going on. I'm a much younger guy. I mean, I'm, I was at the paper from the time I was 16 till I was 23. So I was 21 or 22. I mean, I was
young.
I was in the prime of my life, right? Yeah, yeah. And, you know, I had good ACL, good ankles, good back.
Everything was good.
And a shot came up to the net. And Cap and I would argue, I don't remember if I hit Engelbert Humperdinck in the nuts or Tom hit him in the nuts. It might have been me. I mean, it was like, I'm more thinking about it. It was more like, boom. Engelbert Humperdinck
goes down.
The ball came up on him, and it got up under him, and he went straight down. And his girl came over. You know, I'm at the net, and I'm like, oh, my God, he's got to sing in 6 hours, you know. Yeah. I'm thinking, please release me, let me go. So he's on the ground, and he gets up, and he's like just total. He's like, I'll be all right. So he does this whole thing. He's like, I'm fine, I'm fine. Right. We played on, but we hit Engelbert Humperdinck in the nuts.
So there you go.
During the doubles match. So, pairing. I don't know if he's more famous than your... He never won the World Cup, but he's pretty famous in England. So
in England, these guys...
You and I have destroyed British men's testicles.
Those guys in England competition. Those guys in England are... They're legends.
All right, so Orioles. Who's your favorite Oriole? What do you got going on here? By the way, it's 8-7, and we're really starting to struggle now. But go.
I obviously
you stay here too long, they're going to lose. I got to get rid of you.
Yeah, I got to go. I got to get
Ernie Tyler's family on here.
If they get one more run, I'm leaving. I'm walking off.
Well, you're getting bored with me right now. So.
No.
Favorite Oriole?
Right now, like Adley. I mean, obviously, that's the hot player right now. I think it's a good young group of players. It's a group that obviously we all waited for them to develop. I think they're doing it the right way. And, you know, I go back to the old Oriole way. I went to the 66 World Series game in Baltimore when Jim Palmer was pitching. So I go back.
Got your ticket stub?
Huh?
Still have your ticket stub?
No, I don't. I wish I did. But, you know, and I went to 70. I went to almost every, when they were here in the World Series, I went to at least one game. So obviously I go way back with them. But I think they're doing it the right way. I'm excited.
People think you're a soccer guy. I think we're
all into watching every little thing move they make, and I think I haven't seen that kind of excitement in Baltimore in a long time.
They were bragging about having Adley Rutschman, having these 1-1s, and I'm thinking, you got to really stink. You got to go through a lot of pain to draft 1-1s.
Yeah.
But when you draft them, and this happens,
it turns out
that you get a generational kind of player, and we all believe. And here's Pete, walks in here, retired, not a care in the world for, you know, just helping out at UMBC. Now you're focused on the Ravens. You listen to this Lamar Jackson press conference, and before he even comes on, he's like, we got to get these guys signed. We got to get them long-term contracts. They're puppies. You're already talking about giving them $150 million, or what are we doing here?
Let's get them signed. Let's get them to stay here. I don't want them to leave. Like we need to keep them here.
You're already nervous.
I'm ready to whatever I got to do to keep them here.
Let me ask you this, as a coach, and thinking, and I saw Jay Wright retired, Gary Williams, you know, all these guys, and the Maryland had a. I know you're a Maryland basketball fan too. They had a nice season. The NIL and the transfer portal. Has that affected soccer? I mean, because like for you, you would go and recruit a kid, and that kid would love you because you love that kid and that kid. And I know who you are. You like Uncle Pete to a million kids. They would come in, and I'm sure some kids transferred out of your program. Yeah. You had some kids transfer into you won a championship where went to the Final Four with, as I stand corrected. But because you had like a senior late team, I said, Anthony, wasn't that a young team? He's like, oh no, that was a vet. So he corrected me on the air a couple weeks ago. I appreciate that, but. This notion that you're going to marry a kid in his freshman year, and by junior year, you're going to be Bobby Knight, and he's going to want to go to Temple, or so, you know, something like that. That's not something that you dealt with a lot, right? Like, you fell in love with a kid, you brought him in, and you're like, you're going to go to class, we're going to get you a degree, we're going to get you a job. You know, like here's 30 years worth of kids that got jobs that have been here under my tutelage. You can really sell that to a parent. I don't know where the big money of football and basketball, and then the big money women's college basketball now, you know, like this girl from Baltimore, she's the Bayou Barbie, right? Like all that, running around in the car and all. Stuff that we would have, most of your tenure, it was under the table if it happened, not in your sport because there was no money to begin with, but in the other sports, a lot of money falling off the table. What the NCAA here has done, what, speak for soccer for me and educate me a little, because I don't know enough about the basketball side.
I've not been in favor of it, and obviously I support all the sports, but I know just from a soccer standpoint, I think you recruit kids. There's a certain word called, for me, it was always a word called loyalty. You know, I've always been a loyal person, and I still am. But, you know, you recruit players. You know, it used to be if they wanted to leave and they had to come in and talk to you and have a conversation and basically explain why they wanted to leave, and then you had to give them a permission almost, or if they had to sit out. Some of the rules probably were a little tough on them, but
you had a lot of tough talk to these kids.
But I've had that conversation.
Sure.
Kids stayed.
I thought I would play.
Kids
more,
got their degrees.
Like
in our sport, there's a lot of kids that played, got their degree. The degree for me was always the most important thing. Even though, as much as I'm so was into the soccer and winning championships and getting championship rings, the degree, because I knew, having grown up and seeing great soccer players who never got a degree, who to this day probably aren't. Never got to what they could have if they would have had a degree as far as a job's concerned. So I
soccer
seen,
wasn't going to support. You didn't grow up thinking you were going to make a million dollars in soccer.
Now basketball, I think basketball and football, I still think there's a lot of guys that are, it's a misconception that they're all going to be multimillionaires getting drafted, and the percentage of those guys that's happening is small. But clearly still, like a school like UMBC, you know, probably now the turnover every year in basketball or these other sports where, you know, you get a group come in, if they don't like their playing time, they don't like the towels, whatever they don't like, they're leaving. Or some of them even, the other thing is now players are looking to go into schools just to get into a school, say I played Division I or I went to a Division I school and then want to transfer to next year. So the turnover, fortunately, like that was the other reason, one of the reasons I retired this year was we had a perfect APR, which is the graduation rate. Our grade point average was 3.4 for the first semester. It's the highest it's ever been, and no one was getting on the portal and saying they're leaving. I mean, what better time to leave when everything was perfect, rather than, you know, you could get a group of guys 2 years from now and all of a sudden they're not playing, they're playing time, they want to leave. Then once again, it looks like, because so many colleges now and all these sports, the turnover is unbelievable, players leaving. And it just leaves a bad mark. I mean, you know, you come to college to get a degree and play for Nestor, and then all of a sudden, after 1 year, it didn't work out. You're leaving. You're going somewhere. You're going. And they don't even have to even come in. Nowadays, they don't have to even come in and tell you they're leaving. They don't even have to have that courtesy.
Sheet of paper.
They just go into the portal and
sign up,
and then you find out. You get it from your compliance person. So that whole scenario has changed, and that's one of the reasons that I just don't like that. I don't like that in general because, you know, I grew up, you know, on the days where not only in soccer and other sports, you've seen basketball teams formed and grew, and the next thing you know, it's now at a point where they're doing really well, and you watch that class, the next class, they're coming back, and then by the time they're seniors,
changed college sports. I mean, it's changed. Never going to be the same again.
It's never going to be the same.
And
the money part of it is now you can get certain colleges that, like, UMBC will never have the opportunity to ever give someone a money or a sponsorship, in my opinion, to say, here, come to play soccer here. You're coming to play soccer because, one, you wanted to play for us. Two, the most important thing is you wanted to get your degree. And three, you wanted that chance to win a championship and have a great experience and enjoy it. So that group that came back for the last couple of years, the other day for that reunion and, you know, to honor me, that's what it was all about. They
and
came
eat
back.
Pizza over Franco's and cheeseburgers.
But my point is that was a family atmosphere, and they enjoyed it. And to this day, they're brothers. So in University of Baltimore, you know, when I played there and we won the national championship in 75, when we have a reunion, right, and a lot of guys are still in town, and we have a reunion, if I called today and said we're having a University of Baltimore reunion next week, 90% of the guys will be there. That's just a brotherhood that you always have that you carry over. Those days are gone because these guys today won't even – they might have four different schools they're going to, four different classes that they play with. They'll never – like, what reunion are they going to have? You know,
right.
I'm just saying that whole feeling of we went to college, we played ball, and had a great experience. Now it's where can I go? And the mentality is – A lot of it starts with the parents. You know, you played organized sports. I paid all this money for you. You're going to this college. Oh, you're not playing. You need to go to this college. That didn't work out. You need to go. And it just carries over in everything they're doing. And
well, you don't get a kid that hasn't been handled, even at your level, right?
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, they've all had to pay to play. Yeah, they've all been to some academy.
Yeah, they've all done.
It's a track.
Yeah,
it's literally a track.
Yeah, and literally the track is, you know, as a coach, you sit there and you have a philosophy. So my philosophy goes 30 years. And if you think about what happened my first couple years, we had great teams and a lot of local players, and we had great success. And now you think about where this is headed. I'm scared of where this is heading, because it's just, you know, the turnover and people going, like I said, literally going to school and going 4 different years. The experience of college experiences, you go to school and you have that great experience with your friends, and you become good friends.
Well, you always say UMBC is a special place, and I always felt that coming over to the rack and just walking
and
around.
And it is right now. That particular group that's there right now, they all stayed. They're all dedicated. They all like one another. And, you know, they could easily get a chance. Now, one of our kids, one of our best players, is leaving because he got his degree. He just got his degree, and he's going to get his he wants to get his master's, and we didn't have what he wanted. So we were all in favor of him. Even though he was one of our best players, he had every school in the country, literally every school in the country, asking for him to transfer to them. Now, he hasn't announced yet, but he's probably going to go to one of the biggest schools in the country, and he played for us last year. And I understand it. I understand it because we don't have his what he wants to major
right.
in. He wants to get his master's degree. He played 4 years. He was a good, great student, great guy. No problems. As much as we all would want him to back to
right.
play.
And he's got a year eligibility.
Year eligibility because of the pandemic and all.
COVID,
But clearly, he told us and told us ahead of time. And the degree is the most important thing. So that would be selfish of us to go, oh, we want you to stay. So as much as we wanted him to stay, he's... He'll now,
do a lot of kids think MLS and professional soccer? Or are they thinking that
think
way by the time they get to you?
That. I think kids definitely think that, yeah. And I think a lot of kids will get shocked. I mean, they're not at that ability. Some kids get better and better and better. I mean, you know, we've always talked to kids. I always talk to kids about, I want you to have a goal. I mean, if you came to UMBC tomorrow, I want you to have a goal that you want to play in the MLS or you want to play at the next level, but you need to get your degree, because if all you're talking about is that's your goal.
By the time you're 28, you got to get a job.
You got to get a job. Yeah.
Right.
I mean, you know, Petey, and there's so many kids that went to UMBC or went to, you know, the other schools, Maryland, no matter, wherever. They came, they had to get their degree. Kadeem Dakers, one of our best players, he's played in the USL probably 6 or 7 straight years for probably 5 different teams during that period of time. So you're constantly traveling, get hooked up another team. You're never making the money that...
Barely making a living.
But you play professional. That's what you always dreamt of. You had that experience. But now, 8 years from now...
You're 30.
You got to get a job. Yeah. And now you're starting from scratch versus...
But that's been the humbleness of your sport.
Oh, it's our sport.
And again, that speaks to...
Basketball.
How you felt about it, how hockey coaches
football,
felt.
Football,
different.
That percentage that get that opportunity, they're going to make enough money that the top ones are going to be set for life. But what's the percentage of that? You know, what's the percentage of guys that go into the NBA and sign that contract?
Well, I had a young man here, Ronnie Brown, who was supposed to be with us today. He had a meeting. He had a team meeting with the Buccaneers. Sparrows Point kid, went to Dundalk, went to Shepherd, didn't get drafted. Could have been a 7th-round kind of pick. Winds up, he's going to walk on and try to make the Bucs, right? So that dream... For every kid in East Baltimore. That's one of the reasons I wanted to have Ronnie. Hope we get Ronnie on. Emily, shout out to you for trying to make it happen. Pete Carinci, I'm gonna let you go be retired, all right? Because I love you, Pete.
I enjoyed it.
You're nervous. I mean, the Orioles are in trouble here in the 6th inning.
Base is loaded.
All right,
oh,
I got to get Pete some powder. Powder him down a little bit here. Pete Carinci, former head coach of UMBC, emeritus, retired. So retired, he just drops the headset just drop it. Drop it like a rock star, like Snoop Dogg. I'm Nestor. We're here on behalf of the Maryland Lottery. We're at McFalls, Oyster and Reel, Essex, Middle River, Sioux Creek, Baltimore Yacht Club, Rocky Point, Porter's, Chesapeake High School, 29. $30 winner. We got everything going on here. It's also brought to you by our friends at Window Nation. I've been wearing the fun hat. 866-90-NATION. We're going to be at State Fair next Friday from 2 to 5. Got great guests, including CFG Bank President Bill Wiedel is committed. My buddy Josh Levine, who is a local DJ, who DJs some of our big Purple Pep rallies in Pittsburgh and other places, going to be with us next week. We're also going to be at the local in Falston. It's all brought to you by our friends at the Maryland State Lottery and Window Nation. I'm Nestor. We are WNST, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore, and we never stop talking Baltimore positive.